Supreme Court has made it clear that a very distinct legal boundary governs the determination of whether a person on the job site is an independent contractor or an employee. We cited McCoy versus Colony House Builders in our briefs. There, the Supreme Court stated an independent contractor is one who undertakes to produce a given result without being in any way controlled as to the method by which he attains that result. Now, that case was from 1990. It was quoting a 1942 case. Since 1990, the Supreme Court has quoted that in any way rule several times. That's the firm law of the Commonwealth. And again, it says, in any way controlled as to the method. The evidence here abundantly shows that the employer crossed that in any way line here. The evidence of retained and exercised control appears in the commission's own summary of evidence. At one point, the commission said, Mr. Cooper, that's the employer, agreed that he and Mr. Hannock, the foreman, had authority to instruct the claimant, albeit he did not require supervision given his skills to perform the task. That's the commission's findings. Mr. Cooper, the employer, agreed that he and Mr. Hannock had authority to instruct the claimant. Now, quite apart from all the other evidence in the case, our position is that concession alone moves this case into as a matter of law territory. By making that concession, the employer, as a matter of law, said he's our employee. We have the power to instruct him. It's, again, it's retained power. Never has to be exercised as long as it's retained. And he said, yeah, we retain the power to instruct. The summary of evidence goes on. The foreman testified that he determined the order of performance of the task and gave direction to everyone on the job site, including the claimant. The foreman agreed that when the claimant and other workers asked him for direction, he, that is the foreman, responded, and he also issued corrective instructions when he. Patrick Mannion, employee Mr. Curley brought to the job site, observed Mr. Cooper and Mr. Hannock providing direction to the claimant and correcting his method of work. Again, that's in the commission's
Council, I hate to interrupt you. Question about Mr. Mannion. Mr. Mannion actually comes with the claimant to the job site, is that correct?
Yes,
and
yes, Judge.
My understanding from the facts, though, is that two things, that Mr. Mannion testifies that he would take his orders directly from Mr. Kirkley, that he basically listened to what he said, even when others were instructing him. How does that impact your argument?
Well, we cited the Crawley case in our briefs. I don't have the page number. And that's a decision of this court, and it said a sole proprietor can have employees of his or her own, and those employees are obvious employees. But then the Crawley case says the sole proprietor, him or herself, can also be an employee versus an independent contractor, and it all comes back to the issue of control. Regardless of whether Mr. Curley was instructing Mr. Mannion, the evidence here is overwhelming that Mr. Cooper and Mr. Hannock were instructing, had retained the power to instruct Mr. Curley and exercised that power. So we see the fact that Mr. Curley brought an employee and had the power to instruct him as a non-sequitur.
What about the fact that there is also the $15 an hour that he was paying Mr. Mannion but retaining four of that? Is that a control element that the court needs to look at in terms of whether we're determining if he's an independent contractor versus an employee?
Respectfully, we do not think so, because what we see here is that you have the intersection of perhaps what we as lawyers and judges envision happens on job sites plus versus the reality of what's happening. For example, Mr. Cooper here testified that he paid everyone with a 1099. In other words, he paid everyone as if they were an independent contractor. The reality is some of the people he acknowledged as employees and some of them he He said, oh, that's an independent contractor. But he paid them all as independent with a 1099, which is the way you pay an independent contractor. So again, to us, the fact that Mr. Curtley collected more money than he actually paid Mr. Manning, that goes back to the Crawley case, which says that a sole proprietor can have employees on the job site, but the sole proprietor, him or herself, can also be an employee.
Didn't we, in Purvis, the Purvis case, didn't we say that the payment of wages was one of the factors that could be considered along with control?
Yes.
So how is it a non sequitur then? If
well, I believe that in our briefs we talk about the fact that that distinction is whether you're paid by the job or paid by the hour. It's undisputed that Mr. Curley here was paid by the hour, and that's an indicium of an employer-employee relationship. The Supreme Court in Richmond Newspapers Against Gill said that the power of control is the most significant indicium of the employment relationship. Other factors merely help to elucidate the manner and degree of control. So from our perspective, the commission focused more on other factors than on this frank evidence of control. It's right there in front of us over and over. The foreman said, Mr. Mannion said he observed Mr. Cooper and Mr. Hannock providing direction to the claimant and correcting his method of working. The foreman said, I gave direction to all the other guys. The foreman confirmed deciding who was going to do what task at the beginning of each day.
Is there any distinction, though, that this is sort of a holistic job where there was a part of the roofing that the claimant does independently?
Mm-hmm.
Are you indicating somehow he then morphs into an employee during the second part of this project?
That's exactly what happened, and that comes directly from Mr. Cooper's testimony. He said at page 183 of the Joint Appendix, on the roof, Mr. Curtley had complete control, but that was only a few days. And then a little later, he's asked about when Mr. Curtley would do the framing. He said, Justin, that's Mr. Hannock, the foreman, Justin would tell them what needed to go, probably the order of what we needed to do. And that again is, again, an independent contractor goes to a job site, and his relationship with the person who engages him or her is to do a project. The independent contractor gets there in the morning, says, this is the way, in his or her mind, this is the way we're gonna do this, and does it. In this case, Mr. Curtley went to the job site anyway. He couldn't just get after it. He had to wait and see what was he going to do? Mr. Hannock said he would lay out the walls, number the walls, and say, here's the way I want them put up.
What is the significance, if any, about the fact that Mr. Curtley previously worked for Mr. Cooper under different conditions, where he was paid by the hour without submitting an invoice and he did not bring his own tools? Is that significant at all in our inquiry?
I do not believe so. We cited the Dillon Construction versus Carter case, which is extremely similar to this case on the facts. And in that case, the skilled framer worked for the employer previously and I don't believe submitted a time card. And then when he returned after, he just like Mr. Curtley here, he went out, attempted to go out on his own, and then ultimately ended up back working for this Dillon Construction employer. And at that point, I believe he started giving them a timesheet with his hours every week or 2 weeks or some set period. But again, there's no dispute that Mr. Curley worked by the hour. And the fact that he, if we want to use the word invoice, used an invoice versus a time card, that really seems to me to be a distinction without a difference. He simply reported his hours to Mr. Cooper, and Mr. Cooper paid him by the hour. Again, an indicium of this employer-employee relationship is, were you paid by the hour, were you paid by the job? Throughout Mr. Kirtley's employment with Mr. Cooper, the pay has always been by the hour, which tends to support the conclusion that he's always been an employee. Mr. Cooper's conduct seems to show a lot of control and consistently. And you have evidence of that control. You have it from Mr. Hannock. You have it from Mr. Mannion. You have it from Mr. Cooper himself. And again, we see it as a tripwire.
Well, counsel, let me ask you one other question in reference to the Dillon case and following up on that. One of the things that the court indicates is it's the treating the employees in the same manner. In this case, the claimant, though, was able to leave the job to go to other jobs.
And Dillon Construction, the claimant there also was able to leave.
But they noted that that was a very small component of what his work was.
A few extra jobs, and in here, the only quantification of Mr. Kirtley leaving is Mr. Hannock saying he left the job site maybe once or twice. That's the only quantification. Again, this case is on all fours with Dillon from our perspective. There is no, when you look at the transcript as a whole, Mr. Kirtley started working, I believe, in July and worked until October, late October, when the accident happened. And it's clear, reasonable to infer from it, he was there all the time. He was there a lot, most of the time. But again, the only quantification is one or two jobs from Mr. Hannon. I see him in my reserve time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please the court. My name is Nicholas Marone, and I'm here on behalf of the employer insurer, Joel Cooper and Amguard Insurance Company. Viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the prevailing party, the employer insurer, this court should uphold and affirm the unanimous opinion of the commission, finding that the claimant was an independent contractor on the date of accident and is not entitled to benefits under the Virginia Workers' Compensation Act. The Supreme Court in Berenson v. Whitaker laid out a four-part test as to whether or not an employer-employee relationship exists: selection and engagement of the employee, payment of wages, power of dismissal, and power of control of the employee's actions. The court goes on to say that an employer-employee relationship exists if the employer prescribes not only the result, but also directs the means and methods of the work. This is not the case here, and that's what the commission had found. In this case, the claimant, who is a skilled framer, who was capable of reading and executing blueprints, and who brought heavy tools and equipment to control the means and methods of his work and his employees, which is why the commission was correct in finding he was an independent.
Counsel, do you want to speak to the Dillon case?
Yes. I think there's some differences with the Dillon case. In the Dillon case, Dillon did not have the ability to hire his own employees, which Mr. Kirtley was able to do. In the Dillon case, he was treated exactly the same as he was when he was an employee previously, or when an employer considered an employee. He only brought small tools. In this case, Kirtley brought the big equipment, and he did not bring that as an employee. He was treated differently when he was an employee as when he was an independent contractor. Furthermore, the employer, like I said, retained the sole right to hire employees, while the claimant in this case brought his own employees to the site. And in Kirtley's case, he would leave the site when he pleased for other jobs. He also started on the roofing, which he did completely on his own. And in the second phase, counsel keeps stating that Mr. Kirtley and Mr. Kirtley's means and methods were controlled by the employer, but the two, as the employer testified to at the hearing, the two would get together in the beginning and coordinate how to conduct and how to execute the blueprints provided by the general contractor. Mr. Hannock said he would lay out what would have to be done in order. However, that's to get the result they wanted. It was not the means and methods of how the walls would be framed. That was up to Mr. Kirtley, who directed his employee. Unlike in the Dillon case, he had no employee. Unlike in the Dillon case, he submitted an invoice to get paid. When he was an employee, he was treated completely differently. He was paid, I think Mr. The employer testified that employees were paid every 2 weeks. Mr. Kirtley, when he was an independent contractor, was paid once a week based on invoices, in which the commission found very important the fact that he would charge 15
the standard is really whether there is sufficient evidence for the commission to make the findings. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And in the Dillon case, we affirmed the commission. Does it make a difference that it's the claimant in this case who bears the burden?
I believe it does. The commission's finding of facts when based on evidence seems to be credible and conclusive and binding to the court in the absence of foreign not subject to review. In this case, the commission has decided that the facts as they were received at the hearing resulted in the fact that Mr. Curley was an independent contractor. That should be binding on this court, and that should not be disturbed. And I would say that, binding, there is persuasive argument from the commission. It's called Douglas Freeze v. Vienz Construction, VWC 1960944. It's a 2000 case. In that case, they found the employer did not exert sufficient control over the claimant to establish an employer-employee relationship. And most important factor that they found the claimant supplied his own helpers and that he was paid as a subcontractor with taxes not removed, as Mr. Curley was paid in this case.
Thank you, sir.
I don't believe there's any evidence to support the characterization of the tools Mr. Curley brought as heavy. I don't believe the word heavy appears in the transcript. I believe the testimony was that he brought an air compressor, and there was also testimony that he brought his air compressor because Mr. Cooper's was broken. He brought a nail gun. He brought a few more hand tools. Mr. Cooper provided a lot of other tools. I just don't believe the record supports the statement that they were. That Mr. Curley brought heavy tools to the job site, and Cooper, the claimant there, brought hand tools to the job site, which is analogous. The standard here is the evidence that we challenge two of the commission's evidentiary findings, but assuming that we don't succeed on that, assuming that all the evidence is that it is that remains as it is, then it's set. The court is, that's the evidence the court must consider. But the commission's decision is owed no deference. Not only is it owed no deference, it's gone. We cited, I can't remember the case name, appeal from a JADR court to the circuit court, and the circuit court judge, the lawyer had filed a transcript, the winning side in JADR had filed the JADR transcript in the circuit court, and the circuit court judge looked at the appellant who, to circuit court, said, if the facts are the same, I'm not going to change my judgment. And this court reversed and said, in a published opinion, and said, look, when it comes up on de novo review, which is what we have here, the decision is whether it's an employee or an independent contractor is de novo, a mixed question of law and fact subject to de novo review. That conclusion, is he an employee or is he an independent contractor, that is for this court alone to decide based on the evidence found below. In other words, the commission's conclusion is out and it's for the court to make its own independent judgment. Finally, the issue of taxes is not helpful because, again, Mr. Cooper paid no one's taxes. He paid everyone by 1099. So the issue of whether taxes were withheld or not is simply irrelevant. It has no evidentiary weight. See, my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We will come down and recounsel.